Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is Thursday, March 22nd, 2018. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm reminded constantly as I prepare money and markets today and yesterday of the words from the Buddha, those who are awake live in a state of constant amazement. We're in a wild ride right now, and it's far from over. Well, I said this last week, and it didn't come true, but I'm going to say it again this week. We're launching the new Salieri Report website tomorrow, Friday a.m., March 23rd. This will be phase one of the new website. When you come into Salieri.com, you'll get an email inviting you to come in. You'll come into what's called a splash page. You'll be asked to go to a link to get your new password. You'll return to the splash page and log on to the members area. And up will come phase one, which is all the content from January 1st, 2017 forward. And once we're confident phase one works, we'll then load up phase two, which will include the full library. This has been a very spiritual experience. I'd rather not say too much, as the more I say about it, the more headwinds I create. Thursday was today is Salieri's birthday. We went operational on March 22nd, 1998, and I've always treated that as our anniversary. So this is our 20th anniversary. And I'd like to point out that the new website is coming up after our anniversary, but before the resurrection, which I believe is April 1st. Anyway, thank you again. All the things that we published at constitution.salieri.com and pension.salieri.com to make sure you had easy access during this period are available. We're going to keep them up there. And I so appreciate your support during this process. Australia trip. I'm getting excited. I'm leaving on April 20th for Australia. We've had cancellations, so we were fully sold out. Now we've got opportunities for one person in the May 8th to 12th group and four people in the May 13th to 17th. We had two couples cancel. And so it's going to be first come, first serve. This is very much worth considering if you have the time to do it on such short notice. It's an opportunity to be with some amazing free thinking people. Both groups are astonishing. Wouldn't surprise me if you made lifelong friends. And it really, for me, it was a life-changing trip. If you're interested, just contact us at customerservice@salieri.com. And Darlene and I would be happy to go through it with you and discuss it with you if you're interested. I'm coming back. I'm leaving Australia on May 18th, going to New Zealand, and then coming back to San Francisco by June the 2nd. We hope to have a lunch, so stay tuned and hold that date if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm in Mexico City today. I've been to Mexico many times in my life, but this is the first time I've been to Mexico City. It's the largest metropolitan area in the Western Hemisphere. It's certainly the largest Spanish-speaking city in the world, almost 22 million people in greater Mexico City, and quite an amazing thing. And of course, I'm sure NAFTA contributed tremendously to its growth. I'm here accepting the International Award for Journalism for 2017 from the National Press Club of Mexico. It's the Independent Journalists. We're going to post my speech. It's in the notes for this Money and Market, but we'll post the speech in a commentary in the news site there. I have a video coming at some point from the press club, and I'll be able to share both the text and video with you. We'll have the text up when you log in tomorrow. The number one problem for independent journalists in Mexico is assassinations. 13 last year, 11 in 2016, and I think 4 or 5 so far this year, just one the other day. It was very much on everybody's mind. In the U.S., it's natural healthcare doctors and practitioners. In Mexico, it's journalists. So, I was telling the journalists today in the United States to use the line from The Gladiator: before they kill you, they must kill your name. Anyway, we're all struggling with the same problems. It's interesting if you talk with them about the role and the financial dependency on criminal enterprise. It's a very very similar issues, and are solving our problems. We're all bound up together. The challenge being people are tired. The middle class has been squeezed essentially out of existence, and people are really struggling. And I said to them what I'll say to you, which is the inflation's about to get worse. I'm going to be in Europe 3 times this year. I'll just give you a heads up in case you're interested in getting together. Let me know. I'll be in July in Eastern Europe, in Sofia and Bucharest. And then in August, Western Europe, Germany, Switzerland, France, and Netherlands. A fair amount of time in France this time. I hope to get to Vienna, but I'm not sure on which trip I'm going to do it. And then in October, I'll go to Italy, and I may go to Netherlands as well on that trip. So if you're interested in lunch, dinner, something in Europe in any of those time frames this year, let me know. Flash warning before we go on to our theme. I was just interviewing Edwin Vieira on militias, and this relates again to the enforcement of the Constitution. He's got a marvelous book called Sword and Sovereignty that I wanted to... We've done an interview before, but now that we've done the interview with him, American Suicide on Why a Constitutional Convention is Such a Dreadful Idea, I wanted to have another conversation with him and educate our subscribers about the power and possibilities of militias in the Second Amendment. Well, lo and behold, right after I hung up with Edwin, Cynthia McKinney sent me an email. She had gotten an email, and I just have to read it to you because it qualifies as one of the worst ideas I've ever seen. Hi, Cynthia. Let me begin with my gratitude for your enduring work. I write to ask you to join a Google group created for the purpose of planning our path to update the U.S. Constitution for our feminine concepts and complete participation. Your voice and ideas and leadership is required for the work of the group to be strong. My name is Emily Patton. I provide behind-the-scenes leadership. My work ahead to bring together women public leaders to confer on the most salient points so that when we call for a longer women's strike next Women's Day, we will have clarity on what our commands are upon revisiting the Constitution for the inclusion of feminine concepts and annulling the current wrongs that some call treason that are now in play through a woman's constitutional convention. The public may not get the full implications of what we can do and will do, but the public leaders will have clarity and redundancy of mission. Women of maturity who are able to work in a creative and supportive manner together are in this group. My email is blah, blah, blah. I will need an email to add you to the group. I want to count on your participation as a principal participant and recipient of the benefit of our think tank work. Thank you. Nothing about making sure we get the $21 trillion back or make sure the pension's funded. No, we're going to have inclusion of feminine concepts, whatever that means. This is the latest in many different flavors. I said Baskins and Robin have 57 flavors. And the excuses to come up with a constitutional convention so they can tear up the Constitution. You know, we're approaching the 57 flavors, but this is definitely a new one. All the ones we've tried so far don't seem to be working. So here comes the woman's thing. Anyway, Vera was so funny. He emailed back and he said, "Oh, this is just what we need." Very funny. Our theme tonight is the Fed chases LIBOR. The global squeezes on. It triggers a global game of musical chairs. I've talked about this on many occasions, but I'm going to keep hammering it because it is so important. We have been living in a world where the cost of capital has been coming down, down, down for the big players, particularly government, since 1980, as interest rates came down, and we had the long-term bull market in bonds. And now that's changing, and it's changing with a vengeance, and it's going to change everything. It's a major shift of paradigm, which is invisible to many people. We're publishing our Fed piece next week. It'll be up at constitution.soleri.com. And it's under the Treasury and Fed section, and it relates to the $21 trillion because the New York Fed and the New York Fed and the Fed member banks are the depository for the U.S. government. So if $21 trillion is missing, presumably a lot or all of it went through Fed bank accounts, and they were transacting illegal, you know, or transactions that were outside the laws related to federal finances, and they could not have not known. So diving into the Fed and looking at their structure and how it relates to the $21 trillion missing is very important. And so we hope to have that up next week. Keep an eye out for it. Anyway, so this week the Fed met with the new chairman, Jerome Powell, and the clear message is the time of freely printing money and debt is over. The Fed raised the Fed funds rate. They're raising the benchmark Fed funds rate to a range between 1.5 and 1.75. Now, here's what's interesting. this raises, or and in fact, they're really chasing the market up because they don't control interest rates. The market and the LIBOR rate, which I'll talk about in a second, is accelerating. And if anything, the Fed is the follower here, not the leader. If you look at their, if you look at what the Open Market Committee released in terms of, it's called the quarterly dot plot, it looks that like they expect rates to be at 2.5% by the end of the year. And that anticipates further bumps. So we're looking at a much more hawkish Fed than we've had in recent years. They've said they were going to do these things, and then they've backed off, and they clearly don't see a problem with doing that now. The thing to understand about this is going to raise the cost of all businesses and all goods globally. So everything you buy, every business, every vendor, every person, their cost of capital is going to rise, and that's going to affect the pricing and the valuations of everything. We're watching an acceleration of expenses and indebtedness throughout the system, and you're starting to notice more and more stories about the fact that bills are increasing beyond what they say the rate of inflation is. Now, you and I know that the government rate of inflation is not the real rate of inflation. But the Wall Street Journal had an article this week on water bills increasing on average 5.5%, which is dramatically greater than sort of what incomes and wages are accelerating at. Another article pointing out U.S. government debt is growing dramatically ahead of anything that GNP or income is growing at. And so you may hear the sounds, even though it's late at night, you may hear the sounds of Mexico City out in the background. I'm in the hotel room near the window, so I apologize for that. But with 22 million people, it's very active, even late at night. I want to make sure you address how you're going to deal with this, I'll call it rising friction, with expenses, and not just expenses of your money, but expenses of your time rising. So just if you look at my last schedule, I've spent, you know, at least 200 hours over the last month doing things that were not in my time budget, and they certainly weren't in my money budget. That's what I call friction. And the friction in the system for everyone is major. You know, that's why sometimes I'll refer to the, you know, everything these days is war. Anyway, as I said, we've had falling interest rates since 1980, and so this is a fundamental change. Government money is no longer free, and there are a lot of governments that aren't prepared to deal with that. I put in the notes for the script some of the discussions on the rise in LIBOR, which has been stronger than expected this year. It's the interbank lending rate, and it's a key market rate for the banks, and it'll show you a lot about the tensions in the market. There's no doubt there's a real shakeout in who's able to raise capital and at what price. Although, remember, higher interest rates means the potential for much higher bank profits. The reality is the people who stole the money now get to charge more for the money they stole. So the winners in the financial coup are going to double down here. One point that they made, let me just read it. Our thesis for the year, this is from Morgan Stanley. Our thesis for the year was a rougher ride, and we had a number of things we're concerned about. The reduction in the Fed's balance sheet, so that's quantitative easing ending, and actually the fiscal easing in the U.S. is probably one of the reasons why private money markets are getting so tight. There's some evidence that the Treasury bill issuance is actually crowding out private borrowers to some extent. I hate to say it, but the clear message when you see what's going on in the money market is that crime pays. You have the three biggest banks have now seen an increase in an increase of $2.4 trillion in new deposits since the financial crisis. Let me just read this report. Americans responded to the financial crisis of 2008 by adding $2.4 trillion in new deposits at the biggest three U.S. banks, an increase of 180%, according to an analysis of data by the Wall Street Journal. J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo were the beneficiaries of the deposit increase. The irony is the question coming out of the crisis was whether the American financial system was concentrated in the hands of too few, too big to fail. It seems Americans responded to the question by concentrating even more wealth in those too few hands. Here's the reality. There are too many people in the market who are assuming if they got away with the bailouts, if they got away with Madoff, then you must be secure. They can never fail because they're above the law. The Senate passed a bank regulatory relief. As far as I know, it hasn't passed the House yet. There was a lot of criticism. I have not looked at the bill yet, but the reality is the small banks need regulatory relief. There was a lot of unnecessary regulation and expense loaded on after the bailouts, and the reality is you were punishing the innocent, and a lot of that was just simply not economic. Anyway, as I said, this change in cost of capital is going to accelerate change, and it's going to reshuffle the deck in every aspect of life and work. It's hard to overemphasize how profound the change might be, and the reality is a lot of the change is going to come through how government money is allocated. It's one of the reasons I think there's so much pressure to bring in the guns. The politicians are very afraid. It's what the one of my favorite quotes from the from the president of Luxembourg. We know what to do. We just don't know how to get elected after we do it. What it's triggering is we're going to talk about geopolitics in after money and markets. And it's triggering a global game of musical chairs because you're seeing real geopolitical craziness now that the financial coup is over, the purges are ensuing, and a higher cost of capital means people are fighting for capital. And you're now starting to see, you know, in addition to tax reform bringing home all the money, real trade wars break out and major national security issues coming up. Anyway, remember, as interest rates rise, the people who stole the money can now make more money on their money, as I said. Please note, one story I sent into News Trends was a Venezuela city has created a local currency announcing that they simply had no cash, so they had to create some. Get ready to do the same in your area in 2 to 5 years. There's tremendous political pressure. And the mind control cell tower network may be designed to really prevent the creation of local currencies. The politics to stop them every time they happen are significant. But the reality is it's with a local currency, you're not going to get the money sucked out in the way that you are with other kinds of cash. And there's so much greater liquidity that needs to happen and could create more GNP and growth within communities. And if the squeeze continues in the way that it might for the next couple of years, whether we're creating local currencies or using gold and silver as currencies, we're going to have to get back to that. In the Great Depression, there were 3,100 local currencies, because that's how many counties there are in America, 3,100. Money and markets. The markets are clearly responding to a wealth of bad news. A U.S. dollar index now down 2.56% for the year. It hasn't broken down. You know, when you if you break the 92 line, I thought it would be a straight shot down to 80. But it that's why I keep wondering, have we really broken the 92 line yet? With stronger interest rates, given how much dollar debt there is around the world, we still have the possibility of a strong dollar scenario, despite the way that the Trump administration and Congress are hammering the treasury market. Fixed income, it's a good time to roll up in short-term deposits. That's why I think we've seen such an explosion at the big banks. The last time I looked, you were getting 2.0, 2.1% for 12 to 13-month brokered CDs as the rates are rising. And so people are saying, well, if the stock market is going down and long bonds are going down, why don't I just stay short and roll up with the rates? And I think that's probably what's happening, not to mention the repatriation of capital. The long treasury ETF now down 4.81% for the year, the intermediate down 2.54%, the bond aggregate down 2.05%, and junk down 1.88%. So people are concerned about credit quality. Equities, the S&P now down not quite a percent for the year. We had quite a rough day on Monday, quite a rough day today. This is a good time to be hedged, and it's not a good time to go in, is what it looks like to me. I still think we're looking at least a 10 to 25% correction this year. I believe we're in a long-term bull market, but if Trump really is the Trump administration and Congress are really intent on going to war. That could mean all bets are off. The home builders now down 8.1% for the year. The Europe ETF down 2.7%. Germany down 4%. Developed markets minus North America down 2.29%. If you look at all the charts, it certainly looks like a breakdown, but it's too early to tell. We've got lower lows on most charts and then a real sort of dive this week. The large cap China equity market up 2.06%, so still positive for years. Small caps 3.18%, and emerging markets up 1.5%. Commodity index up almost 0.75%, and then gold up 1.88%. Normally, interest rates should really slam gold, but we see news of Russia stockpiling or accelerating their stockpile. They've been stockpiling for quite some time, more than 10 years, but I suspect others are too. And so not getting hammered by the rising interest rate should tell us something. Silver down 3.44%, and oil now up 10% for the year. Oil's come down quite a bit, though. Anyway, as I said, it was a pretty rough week in the markets. And a lot of investors are just not used to dealing with this much trouble, and that's what it was, an overwhelming amount of trouble coming in. Bitcoin got a little bit of a relief. The G20 said they didn't want to regulate it, and that was followed by dueling celebrities discussing the future or lack of future for Bitcoin. It's trading around 8,700, and as you know, there's no way I think the intelligence agencies are going to give up having Bitcoin around at a decent price to help play whatever games they want to play on the election, as well as a lot of other things that are going around the world. It's interesting, one great subscriber sent me a note pointing out that Snowden is still pushing the Israeli-backed Zcash, and you just can't make this stuff up. Anyway, musical chairs in D.C. Finally, McMaster, the second national security advisor, out, and neocon John Bolton in, which is strange. My recollection was when Tillerson was interested in bringing Bolton in, he got vetoed by the White House. Bolton's going to shock a lot of people. Bolton's a war hawk. He is ready to go to war in Iran and North Korea. In the meantime, Trump proceeded to announce his $60 billion of tariffs on annual imports from China. Rex Tillerson then departed the State Department. Gary Cohn, of course, is out at National Economic Advisor, and Blank Fine out at Goldman Sachs after Gary left the White House. Of course, learning about the fact that he was out through the Wall Street Journal, which is very interesting, as well as John Dow, the president's lead lawyer on the special counsel investigation, resigning because Trump doesn't listen to his advice. The real question is Trump building a war cabinet? I want to discuss that with Lawrence Wilkerson, who's going to be our Salary Report interview next week. I'm going to interview him tomorrow. And the real question is, are we preparing for war in Syria and Iran? I keep noticing that the more we have the QAnon op saying that we're draining the swamp and saying, hold on, it's coming, the more the swamp seems to take over and the closer we get to war. The U.S. Senate joined the House of Representatives early on Friday in passing, Thursday night, in passing a $1.3 trillion government funding bill with large increases in military and non-defense programs, and sending it for Trump to sign into law, and that's to avoid a shutdown. It looks like there's an awful lot of things grandfathered in that, including some very disturbing gun control provisions with Republicans going along with it. I'm beginning to wonder, I just watched another highly disturbing series of DVDs on Pizzagate. I'm beginning to wonder how much of the gun control is afraid of money issues or afraid of pedophilia issues. Because if you look at the truth of what's been going on with pedophilia, I can understand why people are as scared as they are. You know, I've told you many times the story of watching a secretary of HUD be blackmailed over what I believe was pedophilia related to the Franklin cover-up. And if my understanding of what's on the Wiener laptop is anywhere near true, I think, you know, it's funny. I see often the same feeling of fear that I saw then related to the Franklin cover-up. You know, you see people who become so afraid that they just stop being rational and they will do anything, including trying to say that, you know, the Russians interfered with the election and got Trump elected. I could easily see someone saying foreign intelligence got Trump elected, but it wouldn't be Russia. The report I received late today, let me just read it, the quote. In House bill by Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan, Congress just struck the largest blow to the Second Amendment since Barack Obama took power 9 years ago. The House voted today 256 to 167 to pass the Brady-Nix gun control scheme in H.R. 1625. This all happened following Speaker Ryan's surprise effort to tack Feinstein's backed gun control on the $1 trillion must-pass omnibus spending bill. Let me tell you, this was very close. Following the rejection of pro-gun Congressman Thomas Massey's proposal to strip the gun control provisions. So dirty poker by Ryan, and the idea is if Trump doesn't sign it into law, then I'm assuming that went through in the Senate. The House usually was the holdup on gun control. So it lands on Trump's desk, and he's going to say, well, he had to sign it to keep the money flowing. There's also apparently a very quiet pension bailout for multi-employer plans, which I will discuss below when I get to pension funds. Tillerson left the State Department today. He gave a very interesting goodbye speech, not mentioning the president. Let me give you some quotes. Quote, this can be a very mean-spirited town, but you don't have to participate in that, Tillerson told staff gathered in the lobby of the State Department. His comments interrupted by loud applause. Each of us gets to choose the person we want to be and the way we want to be treated and the way we will treat others, he said. I believe that Tillerson's problems were primarily the Ziocons and the Clintonistas gunning for him. He came into Clinton's old bastion, and there were a lot of sort of Clinton and Obama people. But he didn't have experience in government and never developed close personal chemistry with Trump. They're different styles. Anyway, but Madison Tillerson had a real alliance going on to oppose some of the more, I would say, irresponsible policies, including war with Iran or tearing up. It was Madison Tillerson that talked Trump out of tearing up the Iran deal. My guess is the Ziocons have worked very hard to get Tillerson out because he was a real block to their plans. So getting Tillerson out and getting Bolton in as national security advisor is a major, major win for both the Ziocons and the Israelis, and ones I want to talk with Wilkerson about more tomorrow. The way that Trump and Kelly handled the, and it's really Trump handled Tillerson's departure, to me, was a very serious strategic mistake of the kind that Trump makes regularly. But Tillerson's dad had died the week before, and then the parting was handled very, very poorly. And there's no doubt it makes Trump look like he's a creature from the movie They Live. And if you look at the fake news reporting that came after it, it makes the whole town look like the movie They Live. So, you know, the clear message is no adult supervision here, and it's going to be it was a huge waste of political capital that didn't have to happen. There was no, that's the problem as sensible people look at Trump. They just see him constantly waste enormous amounts of political capital. So, you know, it's running a country is not the same as running a casino. Anyway, trade war is probably the most important thing to go on. Trump backed off on the steel and aluminum tariffs in terms of different allies. So a lot of people are getting accepted out. And he's received very heavy pressure from business lobbies not to push a tariff war with China. But today he announced major tariffs on China, and China responded with tariffs on a proposed list of 128 U.S. products. So the war is on, and it's part of what spooked the market, or the anticipation of it spooked it Monday, and it really spooked it today. The 128 products is approximately $3 billion, which Chinese imports from the U.S. are about $172 billion, so it's a small amount. I think the bigger real tariff is the interest rates. So as we do a variety of things to drive interest rates up, China has a very heavy debt load, much of it denominated in dollars, and that means they've got to fight harder to earn dollars to carry that debt. And if we use tariffs to squeeze them, we're really putting them in a box. It's a little bit like what Volcker did to the farmers the U.S. farmers in the late 70s. Farmers Home encouraged all the farmers to take out lots of debt. Volcker then ran up the interest rates, and then Farmers Home canceled the subsidies that they used to pay their debt and put them in a corner. And essentially, it's very similar to what we're in the process of doing to China. If you're interested in the Chinese-U.S. relationship, I did a great interview several years ago with Stephen Roche, and that's one to go back and listen to, but his book is magnificent and very much worth the read on the U.S.-China relationship. U.S. farmers are getting hurt by all these games. They were going to benefit on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Now, of course, remember, it's the big GMO monocrops. But now they're getting hit again with some of these Chinese tariffs. And so this is going to hit the whole ag area. This is an area we did the annual wrap-up last year for 2016, published in January 2017 on the Global Harvest, because I believe food was just going to get more and more important, including as a weapon of war. And Joseph and I think what's happening with Russian agriculture and what it's doing to sort of the global game in agriculture is very important. So we're going to be talking about that more in News Trends and Stories. The yuan petrol contract is ready to launch in Shanghai on March 26th, so essentially on Monday. I don't think it's going to have a major impact on the markets now. The reality, however, is that China and in partnership with Russia is taking many different steps to build an independent liquid global currency and market presence. And that's going at the very core of the Anglo-American stronghold, financial liquidity. Now, the reality is the Anglo-American stronghold has been busted up by bad behavior on the financial coup, bailouts, and corruption. And that has created the opening for China. And so now the competition is on. And this is just one more step that could have a very dramatic impact, in fact, on the build out of the Silk Road. And of course, that's what the fight about Syria is. It's about hegemony in Eurasia and who develops and who controls the flow in the Silk Road. I put some notes in the Money and Markets notes, a piece from Bloomberg that gets into this in much more depth. Well, it's social media hammer time. There's big disclosures on bad behavior by Facebook. It's major brouhaha, which I have very little interest in, although it did spook the FANG stocks, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. As far as I'm concerned, Facebook was never intended to have any data integrity. It was not meant to have integrity. It was meant to be a vacuum cleaner of personal data for the what I call the data beast. And its goal was surveillance. Its goal was control and political control and financial harvesting. And so it was set up that way from the beginning. And why anybody's surprised or shocked always baffles me. Anyway, so there it is. And if you're on Facebook, be prepared to be harvested in horrible and shocking ways. But certainly assume that you're walking up and down a public beach and there is absolutely no privacy. I don't know why anyone is on it. And I figure entrainment is a major part of it. And the other is you're basically putting up your own little website for free. So, you know, all free things of this kind, whether from government or big corporations, come with a punch in the jaw. Just remember that. The EU is looking to do big taxes on social media, on tech, and layer on many different elaborate private policies. The reality is a lot of bad behavior by many of these corporations is now coming home to roost. The Guardian had a very interesting story There was more digging into the Cambridge Analytica story of Facebook interference, et cetera, et cetera. And lo and behold, what do you come to? Israeli intelligence. Cambridge Analytica is getting data from the Israeli government and intelligence services in connection with the U.S. election. So now we're onto the real foreign government and intelligence interference. Again, something I want to talk with about Wilkerson. Another part of sort of Purgeville is McCabe, who was fired by Sessions last week, it turns out had ordered a criminal investigation of Sessions, which Sessions had not known about when he fired McCabe. And you look at this and you think, some of you have heard me say it was like working in the Bush administration where everybody, it's like being in a rubber lifeboat and everybody's going at each other with razor blades. But the reality is we've now taken criminal law and it's now a tool of political infighting. And the GOP House is demanding a second counsel to look into Mueller's role on Uranium One. If you look at sort of the Clinton deaths, we have a whole series of more deaths related to the Christopher Steele dossier related to Uranium One and more on Seth Rich, or an attempted murder this week on Seth Rich. And, you know, everywhere you turn, people are dropping like flies as they try and cover up what the truth was here. But the FBI and DOJ politics are intense right now, and I would point out it's the FBI up to their eyeballs in Las Vegas and the school shooting. So, wouldn't you love to have the truth on all of this stuff? But working at the top of the FBI right now must be a very intense experience. There's a big effort to try and start a sex scandal around Trump. I don't think it's going to work. It may be entertaining for some people, but the reality is in America, we're too busy and tired to care about what consenting adults do. And the reality is we've got a very serious pedophilia problem. And I think people know it, or enough people know it, that I don't think a Trump sex scandal is really going to get anybody anywhere, but they're certainly going to try. War with Iran. The more we see the QAnon op promise that the swamp is being drained, the more power the neocons get, and the more it looks we're going to war. I mean, it certainly looks to me like Trump is doing everything he can to put together a war cabinet. Russia, Russia, more Russia. Speaking of war, Putin won his election with a landslide. If anything, the U.S. and British sanctions that got put on right before Sunday's election, March 18th, helped bring in more votes. In the meantime, coming into that landslide, we had what I call the dazzling magical weapons race. Putin in his presidential address prior to the election, and I've posted a lot about this, and we talked about it in Money and Markets now 2 weeks in a row, but Putin in his presidential address talked about their weapons and took the position that with the new weapons they've developed, America has lost a first strike capacity and military capacity against the U.S., that the U.S. can't possibly win a war with Russia. Trump in San Diego, speaking to the troops, started to talk about these amazing weapons you don't really know about and he can't talk about. So now we have the race of the magical, mystical weapons and who has the more dazzling magical weapons. The reality is the Russians and Americans are in a competition for arms sales, as well as space services. U.S. is last year had a record 75.9 billion arms sales. And I think part of that is having a president who's eager to run around and make deals. And those deals are arms sales. That's 34% of the global market. It's kind of an insane amount of money. It's one of the reasons why I say there's plenty of money if we want to stop doing this. So we've been running at 34% from 2013 to 2017. Russia's number two. They have about 22% of the market. They're the second highest. And there's some pretty significant competition for Middle East sales. Russia's just made some sales to Egypt, Turkey, and Qatar is considering buying some Russian stuff. And my guess is that's part of the reason for the fury right now. China's only 6%, but they're growing, and it wouldn't surprise me if they were growing fast. So the EU came out in support of May's position that the spy was or the former Russian spy was poisoned by Russia. There's absolutely no hard evidence to suggest that that's the case. It looks pretty pathetic at this point, but the EU agreed with May and is recalling their envoy from Russia. And we have one report that the Russian military warns a major war in Syria is imminent. On March 17th, the Russian general staff warned about an imminent attack in Syria. I put that information up. So, Paul Craig Roberts keeps warning us that America's doing everything to start the war. One of the things I want to talk to Wilkerson about is how in the world it is that America thinks it can win that war. Because we're now talking about going to war with China and Russia and North Korea. And if you look at how we're doing this, it looks like we're doing it all at the same time. I'm not clear how this is going to work, especially when we're certainly with China, we're heavily codependent on their economy. We're very much tied at the hip. So let's talk pension funds, because I think the big headwind that I've been dealing with, whether it's website or email or mail or numerous other aspects of our systems and business that I won't go into, this whole period feels very much like what happened in 2008 when Fannie and Freddie went down. Right before they went down, I got booted off of KPFA radio when we ran into enormous headwinds. And it came out right after they took over Fannie and Freddie that one of the top San Francisco money managers had lost $1 billion that they just invested in April. And it went down in August, I think July or August. And so, and they put up a big report on their website saying we did extensive due diligence and we had no idea there was a problem. And here you had the former Assistant Secretary of Housing on drive-by radio, 5 o'clock on Flashpoints, you know, at least once a month, telling them for years that there was a very big problem. So how do you reconcile that? Anyway, but it was clear that I needed to kind of be muffled for some period of time, and that's exactly what happened. I think part of the challenge is, or the big problem was I put up the pension fund article, and I made it very clear. If you look at who is financing the $21 trillion that's missing, it's our pension funds. We buy treasuries, and the money goes into the pension funds, and then it disappears out the back door. And the debt that we get back is not backed with the assets that have been purchased with our money. So that credit is not on the balance sheet. What's on the balance sheet is an IOU from ourselves. So it's a double whammy. We're giving our savings, and we're getting a liability. And so, you know, and the U.S. government has become a huge laundry to simply laundry money out the back door. Anyway, if you haven't read the state of our pension funds at pension.solaria.com, I would really recommend it, because that's the PowerPoint. We don't have to. It is difficult, if not impossible, as a practical matter to enforce in the courts. But it's not hard to say, you know something? Let's stop financing this. We don't have to finance this. We are not required to finance this. We're not required to finance an organization that refuses to obey the law. Part of the problem is the national security state has literally lost its ability to optimize economically. It's kind of a machinery that it's kind of out of control. It doesn't have a market discipline, and it doesn't have any kind of accountability on it, I hate to say. Anyway, so I think the pension fund article was a very sensitive subject, and I think it can change the narrative. What I said in the article is my goal here is to change the narrative, because if you look at the current narrative on the pension funds, it's, oh my God, there's no money, we didn't save enough, we're just going to have to all cut back and hunker down. And I said, wait a minute, you know, that's not the truth. We gave or lent $24 to $27 trillion to the banks. There's $21 trillion missing from the U.S. government. How come we can't maintain, you know, our legal obligations if we're only short $5 trillion? And, of course, you can play with that number. Anyway, I would encourage you to take a look, and I would really encourage you to pass that around, because if we want to get something turned around here, we really need to change the narrative. And What we don't need to be doing is having our hard-earned savings laundered out the back door of Treasury and do nothing about it. French purges, very interesting. Former President Sarkozy was arrested. I couldn't believe it. I almost fell off my chair. It just shows what goes around comes around. In my opinion, it was Strauss-Kahn was sort of trumped up and arrested in New York in an entrapment to protect Sarkozy. Strauss-Kahn was going to be running for president, and that basically took him out of the race. So, you know, if you have arrests done to your rival, it turns, it can come around and happen to you. We see one of the Saudi princes commit suicide at an airport, particularly gruesome. The British wouldn't give him a residency, and so he was headed back to Saudi Arabia and preferred to commit suicide. There's a story there, and you wonder what it is. I don't have a lot to say about the Austin bomber, but that has been a very important thing. One of our team members is in Austin, so we felt very aware of that. And the first article I saw launched a new attack on homeschooling, and I thought, oh, here it comes. You know, they're trying to get everything, gun control, homeschooling. The Weinstein Company files for bankruptcy, and we're seeing a lot of Clinton backers dropping like flies. Schmidt, Weinstein, but I think there are others. Clinton came out with another deplorable comment in India about white American women, and I don't know if you're interested, but you listen to what she said and you just can't imagine that anybody is that stupid. You know, there's a, you think, have we all lost our mind? Is it, you know, is it the 4G and 5? Is this EMF radiation that's causing everybody to lose their mind? Anyway, one of the investigators into the Seth Rich murder was shot twice in the back and run over by a man, former Marine, who was, who used to work as a special agent at the Department of Energy. And so that is putting the Clinton kill list back on the map. I tweeted out last week that, you know, that Clinton had killed, you and I had a better chance of being killed by the Clintons than by an AR-15. Uber has altered its self-driving test as a pedestrian was killed. And it's kind of a metaphor for the whole economy. We've got insecure software, and you wonder, was it hacked by a computer? Was the software insecure? Clearly, the driver who was, or the monitor who was supposed to be watching, was must not have been paying attention. In this case, because Uber's private, it wasn't a short seller, but it wouldn't surprise me if in the process of bringing out driverless cars, all of the various short sellers are going to try and you know, make money hitting you know, hacking into driverless cars and having them kill people. Pretty gruesome thought, but that's the world we're living in right now. We posted a new interview that Harry Blaser did of Tom Paine, who runs, that's a pseudonym, who runs American Intelligence Media. And he's just come out with a huge expose on the deep state is the career SES system, and this is the great corruption, and this is what has to be cleaned out. This is total BS. I've had several subscribers send this stuff to me. It's just complete bunk. You know, and it's complicated. I'm finding myself in a Twitter war about it. But the reality is we need to improve the government employees, not destroy the government employees. So the SES system and the civil service isn't perfect. But if anything, we need to clean it up, make it stronger. The way you do that is by enforcing the laws related to federal finances. If the government wasn't such a big pork fest of money flowing out the back door for free and, you know, outside the law, you wouldn't have this kind of corruption. So you don't solve it by deleting the civil service, because if you delete the civil service, what you're going to get is you're going to get the private corporations and the private banks who stole all the money in complete control of the bureaucracy. So if anything, we need a clean civil service, and we need a greater civil service, and we need many of these functions taken out of corporate hands and put back in government employees. And so be very, very careful about that one. I will try and find the time to listen to the detail, but you don't solve a quality problem by destroying a structure and end up with a far worse structure. That's not how you do things. It's a, you know, we need to solve the problem, not the symptoms. I wanted to point out two book reviews I've written recently that are up at constitution.solarian. It'll be up on the new site. Elena Friedland's book, Under an Ionized Sky, which I recommend very strongly, and Harry Blazer's recorded an interview with Elena Friedland, and we will post that sometime in the next week or two. So you'll have both a book review and then an interview with her. And I also posted a book review of The Papacy, which is a very old book and written in the 1800s about the church and the Catholic Church, the Vatican. And Joseph wanted me to read it. I asked him, how can I understand the split between Eastern Christianity and Western Christianity and why the Russian Orthodox Church is in such disfavor in the West? And so he encouraged me to go back and read this. It's a history of the entire process by which the East and West Christianity split. And what was interesting is several people posted different comments, and they're lengthy. I have them in the notes, and of course they're up on the book review, but you might be interested, and they really relate to the extent of the corruption within the Vatican and the Catholic Church, and how sometimes when I mention that, it can offend some people. One of the questions I got was, I wonder if any of the documents that were in the Alexander Library found their way to the Vatican Library. I think that is an unbelievably important question. And at various times, I've tried to figure out what was the knowledge in the Alexander Library that really put it, made it a target and for destruction. And what was the knowledge and materials they were able to get out in time and hide, and where did they go? And I finally decided not that long ago to call Dr. Farrell and ask him, you know, where do I find the definitive source on the Alexandria Library and what happened? And he said, you know, there really isn't one. And I said, well, you've got to write one. And he said, oh, it's such a long list. I should point out, I'll be over recording News Trends and Stories, and you have got to listen to News Trends and Stories this quarter. It's going to be an amazing, amazing discussion. Anyway, but some of the offense I gave on the papacy reminded me of some of the offense that people sometimes take when I criticize Trump. Anyway, just remember, we have to get out of the trance of loving, you know, we need to put our faith in each other and in our own daily actions, not in centralized institutions. Centralized institutions are in this kind of environment are imperfect. And right now, if you look at what's going on, we love our killers. We finance our killers. We make excuses for our killers. We've all got to come out of the trance. You know, and it's a lifelong journey where it's never over. Our hero this week is W.C. Fields. I was tempted to make it the Solaria team again, but this would that'd be a little bit boring. W.C. Fields was the comedian who said that he carries whiskey because of a snake bite, in case of a snake bite, but he also happens to carry a small snake, which was a funny way of underscoring the problem reaction solution we're looking at. You see so much of the squeeze in the economy coming from organizations that are selling their services by doing something negative. So they create the disease and then they come in with the drugs to heal the disease. And I'm really just, you know, I live in a poor community and so, or sort of lower income median community, and the predatory calls and the predatory lending that we get is just unbelievable. And it's very sophisticated. I mean, you know, I've negotiated with the best of the best, both in Washington and Wall Street, and I'm amazed at how I get to use all my skills dealing with some of the people who work the phones where I live. Anyway, but it reminds me so much of what we need to build a stronger economy is to just stop doing massive amounts of negative things. Reminds me at one point the top, speaking of SES, the top SES leadership in housing at HUD sat down and said, okay, tell us really, what can we really do to help communities? And I said, shut down the agency. You have a negative return on investment. You're taxing people and taking their money and spending it in a manner that shrinks the pie. So just stop doing all the things that you're doing that do harm. Just shut the agency down. Obviously they didn't take me up on that one. Let's go to the movies. One of the things that Dr. Altieri discusses in our interview this evening is the challenges of urban areas. How do you provide fresh local food to urban areas with such an amazing growth? And you see it here in Mexico City, 22 million people and marvelous, wonderful fresh food. That's one of the things I love about Mexico is the extraordinary quality of the food and the love of the Mexican people for fresh food. Anyway, one response to this demand is the growing phenomenon of vertical farming. And I must admit I'm ambivalent about it because I would love to see far more gardens and edible landscapes and other sort of non-industrial food creation. But I think vertical farming is something that's really growing. And this documentary is interesting because you see farmers and entrepreneurs are exploring indoor farming in cities in Asia, Europe, the Middle East, and North America, all over the world. So take a look, because there's no doubt that figuring out how we grow food and grow food in and around megacities is a very important question. Our interview is a wonderful interview between Harry and Miguel Altieri, who's a professor at Berkeley. He is originally from Chile and has fully educated, as you would expect, in disaster capitalism and globalism. He works closely with the campesino movement in Latin America. He knows a lot about the corporate model and how it's overtaken and corrupted science. He has amazing knowledge and statistics, is a remarkable person. And this is a really fascinating interview. He's the founder of agroecology, which is a scientific discipline that really looks at optimizing the agricultural systems, but in the context of all resource use, and he has it's sort of the integration of everything as it relates to food. And of course, he and Harry are fascinating to listen to about food. One of the most fun trips I ever took was into the mountains of Mexico with Harry and Miguel, talking with farmers about creating a new supply of really fresh food to high quality grocers in the United States. And we got to meet a lot of great farmers and got to eat a lot of great fresh food meals. It was quite fascinating. Ask Catherine. Catherine, Secretary of State Tillerson goes to visit Southern Argentina, surrounded in some secrecy in February, and a month later is fired by President Trump. Is there a connection? Many presidents and secretary of states have visited before Tillerson, even President Obama. In my opinion, it's unlikely. I think the disagreement was much more focused on Syria and Iran, and Trump is looking to put together a wartime cabinet. Tillerson was not in that mode or spirit. And so I think, if anything, this was... I go back to the Zionist. Tillerson wasn't a Zionist man. Catherine, what do you think the chances are that Gina Haspel will become the head of the CIA with her background of being involved in the rendition program that used enhanced interrogation techniques? She brings heavy baggage getting nominated. Or is President Trump putting her name for consideration of that position to put John Brennan in the headlights as he supported enhanced interrogation and terrorism suspects sent to countries where they might have been tortured? It seems Brennan and Haspel do have a working relationship, as in 2013, Brennan named her as acting director of National Clandestine Service. So what do you think? President Trump really wants this lady for the CIA? Is he setting a trap for John Brennan? I don't have a read yet on whether I think she's going to get the post. I think we need to see how Pompeo, his confirmation goes, which should start in early April, second week of April. I think the goal is to have integration between state and the CIA. So by taking Pompeo's choice for CIA deputy, making them ahead of the CIA, essentially Pompeo can run both of them and they will be more integrated. So again, I go back to a wartime cabinet. I'm assuming the logical reason she was chosen is her resume clearly indicates she has extensive knowledge of full CIA operations. She knows where the bodies are buried. It's very hard to get your arms around what is really going on there because there is so much secrecy and the size of the hidden system of finance and all the contractors. Without good disclosure and transparency, is very difficult to kind of really, you know, when everybody's on a need-to-know basis, it's hard to know everything. So, and the secrets are the most dangerous in the world if they're disclosed. So I think if you look at her resume, I think she would know the secret side of the CIA and, you know, has simply been there her whole life. So I'm assuming what Trump wants is a wartime cabinet. I'm assuming he wants superb integration between state and CIA, and someone who will be loyal to Pompeo is what it looks like to me. And what the politics of this are depend on what the we'll learn a lot from the Democrats. If the Democrats are very supportive, I think it's because this is the sort of pro-Zionist choice, but we'll have to wait and see. Again, I'm going to ask Wilkerson about it. This is much more his beat. Dear Catherine, all I can say is I've listened to Sophia's podcast where you were telling how corrupt the government is. It's not news at all, and this is not the point. The point being that you said we don't die, but rather we transit to another stage. I am into anything not physical in a big way, as well as into investing strategies, pursuing freedom from slavery and conscious moral approach to generate passive income. I love the idea that there are people who possess these two qualities, knowledge how the system works, so as not to be burdened by a spiritual perspective in life. We are being brainwashed so much. Anything that relates to asset allocation is infested with bad advice. And even so-called investing gurus say one thing and complete the opposite. Go figure who is right. Thanks for reading this, and thanks for associating with John Rappaport in your podcast. Listening to his voice puts me to sleep faster. Good luck with all your endeavors. I keep an eye on updates. Regards. Well, thank you very much for that comment. Hi, Catherine. Thank you for sharing the links on 5G and other technology. I'm attaching the article I published to the Reddit Q group. I'm working now on an article on consciousness. It's a big topic. I will send it forward when it's completed. Joseph said you were asking for prayers. You definitely have mine. I'll be meeting with a group of serious prayers, and I'll put your name on our list. My heart and thoughts are with you. Keep us informed, please. Love is forever. Thank you again so much for all the prayers. She sent a great article that she wrote on 5G, and the more I learn about 5G, the more disturbing it is. And I keep sort of frustratedly trying to figure out how I'm going to deal with it myself personally. And I think we're all going to have to figure it out. Someone sent us another post on the strange rainfall in Southern California. Yes, it definitely looks like weather warfare in Montecito. Oprah's house is going to get flooded again. Hello, I'm 35-year-old working single family and am trying to educate myself on how I can diversify my savings retirement. I have a 401k that I contribute to as well as an IRA. I have a friend who is recommending I start investing in silver. When I ask my parents, they tell me that silver is okay to have, but to rely more on the stock market, saving the traditional way. I'm torn because I always heed my parents' advice because they are wiser in their 70s and have always steered me in the right direction. I'm just not sure what to do. Thank you so much for your time. If you look at our best books for 2018, or just look at all our best books in the wrap-ups, there's great books, recommendations for investment. And I strongly suggest you get yourself grounded in what, you know, the great thing about investment is you can look at it mathematically. What has been the mathematical history of what has worked and why? I always recommend several of James Montier's books, and they're fantastic. So take a look at best books for 2018, and I would get yourself some books on investment. I think you're trying to turn an either or something that's and into an either or, and it doesn't work that way. I have a great commentary called "What Percentage of My Assets Should I Hold in Precious Metals?" And if you read that, you'll realize there's a place for precious metals. I think there's also a place for equities, and historically equities have been very good. Whether they're that good in the future, given the peak resource problems we have on the planet, there are issues there. So you're going to need to get yourself educated and think in terms of, we have a couple of different Solaria reports on the process of managing and governing your finances. and it talks about the importance of balance and diversification. So I would dive in and start reading. Dear Solari team, I know you're working hard on your website, and I also know this issue is important to you. They sent a couple links on net neutrality. Thank you. I will take a look. Catherine, thanks for keeping it real without all the hype. Sorry, this is the only way I could find to reach you. Have you tried any of the Blue Shield devices in this book? I'm particularly interested in the Cube, but evidently there's no objective means to tell. Grateful for any information. So I sent them a detailed report that I've gone through in the Solari report. I've gotten positive results. I have three. I have the Cube for my house. I have a portable one for travel, and then I have the gold Tesla for the car. And I've had great success with them, and so have my flowers. We got a lot more orchids reblooming after I loaded in the Blue Shields. I've not heard you discuss the urban renewal beginning in the 50s. I assume this was part of the beginning of the harvest. Yes, and part of local control. Hi, Catherine. If you have 2 minutes, I'd be interested in you becoming aware of what I'm working on. They sent me a trailer for a documentary called Father Spirit. I loved it and posted it at Solari, so you can find it there. Hi, Catherine. I just finished listening to your interview with John Rappaport. It was excellent as always. John's insights are a gift. He helps all of us see more clearly. I use his logic lesson in my classes. The students love it. I also wanted to keep you updated about two of my retirement projects. I'm in correspondence with Elena Friedland about an article I'm researching for a blog. The theme is 5G. Okay, this was the previous 5G, and then they go on with another one. And are you going to have a New York luncheon this year? Please let me know the date so I can save my pennies and hopefully join you there. No plans for this year, but we will keep in mind if people are interested. We will keep it in mind. Okay, well, our new website is coming out with a great lineup of Solari reports. Next week, March 29th, the National Security State. What's next with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson? He never pulls any punches. And he's not a fan of the Trump administration. So this is going to be, we're going to hear a very interesting discussion. And you'll never meet anybody more blunt about the challenges with Israel. So between Cynthia McKinney and Lawrence Wilkerson, we're really going to have a time. And then April 5th and April 12th, the first quarter wrap-up news trends and stories part one and part two with Joseph. We are really going to chew through everything that's happening. And I think that will really help you get your perspective. You know, the number of things going on in the change is dazzling and explosive and accelerating. But I think Joseph and I are going to lasso it down and really help you get perspective on it. So that's going to be good. I was hoping the organ would be installed by the time I got there to record, but it's I think it's going to come sometime in mid-April, so I won't get to see it on this trip, but I will in the second quarter. And then April 19th, we'll have the equity overview, and then April 26th, the space-based economy, more in space. We've got a whole lot of other interviews coming up. Harry Blazers, as I said, has interviewed Elena Friedland. I've done an interview with Edwin Vieira, sort of next in the Constitution, enforce the Constitution theme. And then wonderful reporter Dave Liedorf on the Abacus Bank story, the wonderful bank in Chinatown that beat another, here we go again, malicious prosecution. Anyway, so a great lineup and very pertinent the next 3 weeks. Colonel Wilkerson and then Joseph Farrell on News Trends and Stories Part 1 and Part 2 really help you see what's going on. And where this the drumbeats of war are leading us. So remember, tomorrow you're going to get your new invitation to get your new password and start enjoying the new Solari website. And we hope you will let us know what we can do to make it better. We're going to be into continuous improvement now that we have our teams working on one website instead of two. So until next week, I want to remind you of a great quote that came in this week by email. If you think you're too small to be effective, you've never been in bed with a mosquito. So ladies and gentlemen, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Good night and good luck.